All right, good morning. I will call us to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday morning, April 21st, 2015, and ask if everyone would please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? If so, please come right up here. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to recognition of 2015 Story County Citizen of the Year. Story County Citizen of the Year Award is given annually. This is the first time. Given annually to residents of Story County who perform meritorious service above and beyond what would be expected of a citizen. Their efforts demonstrate creativity, vision, leadership, and citizenship by providing service to programs and activities that positively impact the welfare of the citizens of Story County, Iowa. This extraordinary service is either through their regular vocation or in the community outside their vocation or a combination of both. As I said, this is the first time we're doing this. In future years, it is our expectation that it will be more of a process with full-blown nominations and a panel. This year, however, we had two individuals that clearly rose to the top and were absolute no-brainers to be our inaugural Citizens of the Year. And so first, we'll recognize both of them in order. First, I would like to recognize Mayor Wally Loney. Mayor Loney, he is absolutely the true character of the city of McCallsburg. He's been mayor continuously since 1988. He's the longest tenured mayor in the state of Iowa, and he also lays claim to the oldest mayor in the state of Iowa. And I think nationally, Wally, is that close to true? Nationally, oldest mayor in the nation. I will say this about Mayor Loney. He attends every single meeting that we ask him to attend. He is always good for a laugh and a smile. And he is one of those individuals that when he speaks, everything else in the room stops and everybody listens and processes what Mayor Loney has to say. I am proud to call him my friend, and I am proud that he is one of our first recipients of Citizen of the Year here in Story County. Please join me in congratulating Mayor Loney. Come right up here.
Short in stature, but I'm going to call you the gentle giant. And you know what that signifies? You know, a person that is so kind and gentle and thoughtful and caring about everybody else, but is a giant in terms of commitment and service and dedication to getting the job done. If all elected officials could model after you, you know, what a great group of people we would have. And so I just wanted to personally say in my 15 years, it has truly been an honor to work alongside of you on various things, and your commitment, as Rick has already said, is a standard that's tough to beat. And I would like to acknowledge one other friend who's a former colleague of mine, Jane Halliburton. I mentioned to Jane about today, and she tried to rearrange her schedule because she also wanted to be here for not only your recognition, but the other recipient as well. So, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, and Rick's kind of let me hand this to you, only because I'm a tenured member of the board.
Rick is old.
And this is a certificate of appreciation presented to Mayor Wally Loney, nominated for the 2015 Story County Citizens of the Year Award, and it's signed by each of the board members. And I'll hang on to this now, and then you go back to your seat. And so forth. We'll do that. We also have a cut here.
Hey, Wally.
Did you notice anybody in the back of the room? Wally's family slipped in here while he wasn't looking.
Yes, you did.
Well, after we take this picture, let's have them come up and join us and be part of the picture with you as well, okay?
Okay. I'm going to count to three. One, two, three. Hold it. Perfect.
Okay. Thank you.
Family, please come up and join us.
We'll slide to the back.
Yep, we're right. Sliding back. You stay right there. You stay there, Martin.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Our second absolute slam dunk, no-brainer citizen of the year for this inaugural is Dr. George P. Bledsos. He's the founder and chief executive officer of Youth and Shelter Services, which is headquartered here in Ames. George, we were fortunate that George came to Ames in 1971, and Ames Iowa State YMCA hired him to help the troubled youth that we then had congregated in Campus Town. George, with the sole purpose, he started out with the sole purpose of helping troubled youth, and in fact what he did is he changed the state of Iowa. George opened the Bus Stop Youth Drop-In Center in 1971 and Shelter House, which is now known as Rosedale Shelter, in 1972 as safe, drug-free havens for youth. After leaving the YMCA, he opened YSS in 1976 to provide prevention, education, treatment, and residential services to families and children. George's work gained the attention of then-Governor Robert Ray, who saw how effective these programs were, and worked with lawmakers to change state law to decriminalize runaways. Prior to that, runaways were jailed and housed with adults. Definitely not ideal. Under George's leadership, YSS has grown to impact more than 8,000 youth each year. YSS provides $15 million annually in services to troubled youth and their families, and the nonprofit has 19 locations statewide. And I will tell you that Story County is a great, great place. George Bledsos has a lot to do with that. We're going to miss him as he moves on to the next chapter in his life and gives up the reins of YSS. But, George, we're so proud that you're one of our citizens, and we thank you so much for everything you've done, and I can't think of a more fitting honor that we can bestow than Citizen of the Year. Anything to add?
Nope. I think you said it all. George certainly has been a monumental person in the community. One thing I would say, you know, George doesn't like, and I'm sure it's true of Wally, to be recognized for all the great things that he's done. So it was quite a monumental task to be able to figure out how we can get Jerry and a few people to get him over here, you know, for this recognition. But I think it's really a testament when you look at the number of lives that he's impacted throughout the state of Iowa and through YSS and all that they've done. We just, you know, are honored that you're one of us. And thank you so much for everything.
Please do, George. George never misses an opportunity with a microphone.
I had a sneaking suspicion that you were going to mark my retirement July 1, 2015 from YSS, but Jerry was very skillful because this is the first time I've come to the Board of Supervisors meeting without my own agenda. So thank you very much for the recognition. It's really the first public recognition I've received, and I, you know, as I retire, we will have a new CEO at YSS July 1. I will step down as CEO, but continue part-time helping the next CEO get their feet on the ground and get off to a good start. I want you to know that it's been a privilege and an honor to work with the youth of Story County for the last 40-plus years. I always say that youth may only be 23% of Story County's population, but they're 100% of the future. And it there's no worthier cause than giving hope to young lives that sometimes feel hopeless. And, you know, I've always had a dream. I came here to Story County with a dream, but it's been the local support and including the leadership from the Board of Supervisors that has made that dream come true. I may have had the dream, but you made it come true. Way early on, when we opened Iowa's first emergency youth shelter, which you talked about, it was very experimental, plowed new ground. Very early, Judge Milt Sizer came to the Board of Supervisors and said, I want you to make this program a part of the juvenile court budget. And that started what continues to this day of being a great relationship where this Board of Supervisors has really promoted services in Story County, and you have become the premier county as far as comprehensive services to our young people. I want to end by just describing YSS as sort of like being in the weaving business. We take broken threads that represent people's lives and try to find a place for them in the fabric of the community. The loom that we're working on, you built, and our other local funders. The more of those broken threads we can get into that fabric, the stronger our community is. There's a lot of diversity. There's a lot of different families, different kids that we work with, kids that are hungry, kids that are underprivileged, kids with special needs, kids with mental health problems, kids who have broken the law, kids who have run away, kids that have no real problems at all but want to be of service. I mean, we serve them all, and you have made it possible. So thank you. And all the previous Boards of Supervisors for the support you have given YSS.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. Thank you very much.
So to those of you who maybe have some grocery shopping that you're supposed to be doing right now, if you'd like to go, nobody will hurt our feelings if they depart after this part of our meeting. Next on our agenda is a report from the Story County Community Foundation by Dr. Jennifer Garst, who's the executive director. And Jennifer, we're really glad you're here today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for letting me come and give you an update, and it's always fun to chat with you and also to be invited again. It's a repeat business. I'm going to start off with our new mission and vision for the Story County Community Foundation. At our last board meeting, we approved our new mission and vision. The vision of the Story County Community Foundation is that Story County will have a stronger, more vibrant future through a legacy of philanthropy. Through that, we will facilitate and promote private giving through the establishment of endowments. We'll act as a resource for nonprofit endowment building and award grants for the betterment of Story County. That's kind of now I'm done reading. You're off the hook. And basically, the Story County Community Foundation, I would say, is on a roll. And we've done that through endowment building and grant making, and I'll give you a little update on each of those. The Story County Community Foundation started in 2005 primarily because of the county endowment program, where each county that did not have a gaming establishment would receive revenues from the gaming industry. To date, we have received over $1 million from that source of funding that goes into our grants that we give away each year. 75% of that amount is given out in grants annually, and 25% is put into an endowment so we can keep giving grants forever. That is our largest source of the grants that we give out, but we also have community members who are starting to donate to grants. So since 2005, we have given out $838,000 worth of grants. And in your materials I provided for you, there's a listing of our grants last year. And our major grant last year was to primary health care, which provides low-income and underinsured people medical health care. The year before that, I'm blanking. But we've given out a major grant every year, and then we give up as many up to $6,000 grants as we are able. And as you can see from the list, it's a wide variety of causes that we give to, and we try very hard to give the money out throughout the county. Mm-hmm. And some of these organizations don't have a lot of opportunity to ask for money because of a fire department. Where are they going to go to get a grant? They can come to the Community Foundation for that. It's pretty fun to give away money. We're able to only fund 33% of the requests we had last year. So, of course, we never have about enough money, but we are striving to continue to grow our grant pool beyond the county endowment program. Endowment building. I don't know about your personal situations, but most of us in this room who have kids who are grown, it's likely that many of them are no longer live in the state of Iowa. And if that's so, what happens when we die is our resources follow the kids. So we have not only what we've called a brain drain in Iowa, we have a wealth drain. And the state legislature has created a program to help alleviate that issue. And they have created an Endow Iowa tax credit program where if every gift that's given to through an Iowa community foundation for an Iowa cause that is permanently endowed receives a 25% tax credit. That is a tool, but the reality is people in Story County love their communities. Mm-hmm. And through that tool and the love of people of their communities, we are now at the point of having $8 million in endowments in over 110 funds. We work with over 50 nonprofits to help them grow endowments. That money is here forever. And $8 million with a 5% payout is $400,000 of spendable money every year available. And that's available to spend. Each fund gets to decide how they want to spend their money. So it's pretty fun to work with donors who love their community and work with nonprofits who say, we want to create a future for ourselves to support our cause. And it's kind of fun because YSS and Mainstream are in this room, and they're a few of our fund holders. As of yesterday, in the last 4 years, over $1 million has been donated into the Community Foundation in these permanent endowments. And as of yesterday, we have already had $548,000 donated this year alone. So, again, it's people love their community, and we're providing the resources. And also through our relationship with the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines, nonprofits access far greater investment resources than they may otherwise be able to afford on their own. Why I think it's exciting to talk about this to this board is I think what we're doing is also economic development, because that's money that's not leaving our state, leaving our county, and is right here. These are national figures, but I looked up on the internet. You can look up everything. Is a nonprofit's 9.2% of all wages and salaries paid in the United States in 2010 were to nonprofit organizations. In terms of the GDP in 2004, nonprofits represented 5.3% of the GDP. This is nationwide figures. But nonprofits make a lot of the economic sector of our county, as well as my other part-time job is a banker. And as a banker, if your community doesn't have parks, has a resource for troubled kids, has those amenities, nobody wants to work in your town. So the nonprofit sector provides a base for a pleasant environment for people to live in, which is economic development. When I talked about the 5% and $400,000 of spendable money every year from our endowments, in actual reality, last year alone, in 2014, the Story County Community Foundation gave out $104,000 in grants, and we had distributions from our endowed funds of $311,000. That's $415,000 of hard cash that went into the economy last year. Already this year, we have already distributed over $200,000 in cash to our nonprofit funds. So it's kind of exciting to make a difference in the economy and also to help donors do what they love and to the support of our nonprofit community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all of my prepared remarks, any questions?
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for your work with the Story County Community Foundation. I truly view it as a private partner to what we try to do here in Story County, because you go through this list of areas that are funded, mm-hmm. at least partially through the Story County Community Foundation. In many cases, Story County is also a funder or a partner or part of one of those groups. I know that just last week we approved $50,000 to spend on the new healthcare center, which that was your major grant this last year. Mm-hmm. And we're also actually sending $50,000 through the foundation, I believe, in order to handle renovations at the airport. I believe that you guys have...
That is not known to me.
I'm transposing where that is. I thought Dean told us that these dollars were running through the community foundation. Did I miss that?
That sounds familiar, but don't hold me to it.
It was probably through the economic development.
Yeah,
we'll have to go back and take a look at it. But
I don't know nothing about that topic, so it's unlikely.
Yeah, I would say absolutely unlikely, but I thought it was. In any case, clearly there are many, many areas that our efforts tend to complement each other, and I thank you for taking the helm of this and coming and reporting to us. Paul Wayne, anything?
No, I think, it's just incredible the role that it's played, and it's continued to grow. I remember first few years when it was first proposed, there were some hurdles that had to be overcome. But thanks to the members that had this idea of how it could access resources to continue making programs and services available, we see the success that it's generated over the years. And so, again, we want to thank you for your leadership in this area and look forward to continue to partner in the future.
Thanks for coming. And it's very valuable information. And now the next time somebody asks me where the Community Foundation gets their funding, I'll have the right answer for him.
Can I leave you with one story?
Please
one
do.
Of my yeah. favorite donors is an elderly woman who gives us one check a year. You know, not a huge check, but she divides her gifts into 26 different funds.
Hmm.
That woman loves her community,
right.
And she wants to support many nonprofits. And one of the things that's nice about the Community Foundation is each person can support what they want to support.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, not every one of us is going to support every nonprofit we work with, but everybody loves a few or more of the nonprofits, and it's fun that people can tailor their support for their community in the way they want to. And it's fun to work with them.
Well, I'm glad you're having fun, and it shows. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Yep.
Agency Reports is next, and we have Mainstream Living and Learning Center, Bill Vaughn.
Okay.
Hi, Bill.
Okay. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I get a bat fourth. I get to do cleanup.
Cleanup.
Amazing group you got me signed up afterwards. So you get Wally, George, Jennifer, and then me. I feel quite honored with that. I sent a report earlier for you, and I understand it's in your packet. I don't want to bore you with reading it to you. But I would like to talk a little bit, if I can, at the beginning here, about Mainstream Living and our 40th anniversary, which will be July 1st of this year. And I want to thank Story County and the supervisors throughout the years for all of your support. As an organization, we've grown. We're very large now. We serve 500 people with disabilities on any given day in four different counties. And we all started in Ames, and we started with Story County, and we started with you guys. So thank you for years and years of support, you and your predecessors. And we're quite proud of that. We've grown to the point now that our annual budget's $18.6 million, and we have just this month, we went over 600 employees. So that's a large organization. For Story County, we don't end up providing all that resource. We have a lot of people on Medicaid. But you do have some people that aren't qualified for Medicaid or in the process of qualifying for Medicaid that you help purchase some of those services or, you know, your matching share for those services as well. We provide home and community-based services in Story County. We also provide Mainstream Employment and Learning Center services. Sorry, I'm a little bit short of breath. I've been taking this steroid sort of thing because I have some sort of respiratory issue. So it sounds like I'm pausing a lot. I am. Our home and community-based services, we provide hourly and daily services. We also provide services for medically fragile individuals. We opened a 5-bed medically fragile home here. It's now going on 8 years ago. We're very proud that the five people that moved into that facility that we were told would never live to the age of 20 are all still with us and all still living in that home. We've since opened two other homes like that in Polk County, following the model that you started here in Story County. In our Mainstream Employment Learning Center, which used to be a workshop, we modified it to a day rehabilitation program years ago. And then we expanded it and added a snooze lender sensory kind of area for it, which mm-hmm. helped us do all of those things. So thank you for that. And 2 years ago, we started a new program out of that called ACE to allow advocacy, community, and engagement activities for people that were very high functioning that still had disabilities in the community. So a scattered site sort of location up by the North Grand Mall area. In the Northern Lights complex, where people can get there by themselves, do a very independent kind of program. And we're seeing that as really kind of the future as the world kind of changes, looking for its kind of growth. We also have enclaves. We have three enclaves in Story County where we have 47 individuals, and we're looking to expand that and hoping to invite other companies to work with us to have our people with disabilities come and work out of their employment settings and with supervisors from Mainstream. That's been a very successful kind of model for us. So we're excited for the future, and we're very appreciative of the past for Story County. If you have any specific questions from the report, I can go over that for you. The only thing I would point out is that we did have a jump in the number of quarterly hour SEL units that we provided. During 2013-2014, we received $7,669 from the county for those services. We're on track to have $46,171 because we have some people that we take over that we're providing services for that are in that process of getting, you know, approved for Medicaid. I anticipate that that'll go down next year. We're asking for $9,000 for that. We work very, very closely with the county. Deb's wonderful to work with. We work very closely with the region. I think it's a very exciting kind of process, seeing all of that kind of come to fruition. And I'm really excited about the managed care organization movement that the state's kind of moving toward.
Now, wait a minute. You're excited about it.
I am.
Okay, now explain.
Make me excited about it.
Make me excited because I'm hearing a lot of apathy and a lot of concern, and there's so much unknowns out there. So what is it that makes you excited?
Okay, I'm a CARF surveyor, so I see it in other states.
Okay.
When I go out and I review other programs, and I've gone from everywhere, Seattle, Washington, down to Austin, Texas, to Maine, and I've been in Canada over the last 9-10 years for CARF. So it's exciting to see some of the creative things that can be developed. They're scary. It's a scary process. It scares people that are moving to that kind of service. It's scary for the counties as well, and for people that are approving and reviewing services and have done that in the past. It's very scary that you're going to lose those people that know you're the people that they're receiving the services, and that people are going to fall through the cracks. That's scary. In 1997, I started a company for Mainstream and three other providers in Polk County, and it was a capitated model. They gave us individuals that did not qualify for Medicaid. They gave us about 100 of them. And asked us to provide all services for them, whether it's housing or their medical services, keep them out of jail, keep them healthy, and keep them safe. And that was really scary in 1997. In 1998, in a year, we learned a lot. And in 99, we got things rolling. And I think it'll be that kind of a process with this as well. It'll take a few years for that to happen. And when that did happen, people that didn't have opportunities before or were very restricted by the rules from getting services or maybe even having more involvement with their family and being creative with how they got jobs or living situations, we were able to come up with a whole variety of different kinds of things. And I think the bottom line was it was better services in the long run. So I may want to be one of the few people that's excited about, you know, the prospects for it. I think it'll be scary in between.
Well, Bill, how do we help educate a lot of groups, providers, and others, particularly in this area with so much uncertainty? We seem to be on a fast track to get this up and running. I think, you know, and if it's the same with the total number of provider groups, most of them are out of state that's wanting to come into Iowa. We're asking legislators, okay, is there any oversight? How do we, you know that whoever comes in, you know, is held to certain standards that we in Iowa feel is important, not necessarily what happens in other states, but how do we get that message out to help alleviate some of the anxiety that's out there?
Well, I think the advocacy meetings and the forums that have been taking place and, you know, people being able to participate in those have been really, really good. I'd like to see that kind of continue. I think the legislature are trying to, you know, put some sorts of outcome measurements to kind of control some of the change is good. The RFP itself, you know, it sets some limits on what the managed care organizations can do and how fast they could do it. You know, maintaining the rates for people and making sure that those wouldn't get cut, and then requiring after 4 years that there was some sort of consistency with how they're going to be doing their reporting, their documentation, and their use of technology. So I think that there's some good things there that people don't necessarily know about. But I think just sharing, I think, with people and sharing information with them is the biggest challenge. It's confusing. There's a lot of acronyms. You know, we talk in the alphabet soup a lot, and I think that's confusing for people. I've had lots of calls with lots of different parents and talked with a lot of our people. But it's very confusing for people. And I think over time, when they go to the meetings, they do a review of their family member and their concern because the language is different and the reviews and the assessments are different and they're scored in a different way. And for years and years, you tell your person with a disability that you're doing good because you can do this. When you have to step back and say, but will you be safe? if we weren't here? You know, if somebody wasn't here at night with you, would you be safe? Or would you be potentially at risk in your community or for your safety, for your health? And so that's requiring a lot of education for people to talk about. We're going to have to look at this from a different perspective. You know, I don't think that the managed care organizations are necessarily the bad guys that they get projected as. We've met with many of them. There's, I think, 17 or 18 different companies. A lot of them have come to the Iowa Association of Community Providers and talked, and then come to different providers that are larger providers and talked one-on-one. And now, granted, they're trying to get the contract, but there is a partnership there, and there's, a need for them to provide $4.2 billion worth of services in the state as well. And people don't understand that, you know, that there are restrictions that they can only have 15% in profit or administrative costs, and people don't understand that. But there's some limits to what they can do, and they're going to want to provide services. But as providers, we're going to have to be better at recording outcomes and telling people how well we do what we do and that the impact of that for people that have disabilities.
How do you envision this apparent move toward managed care impacting mainstream?
I think the first things that we'll see is some challenges if we have four different providers for how we'll be credentialed, how we'll get approved for services through Medicaid. I'm worried about a cash flow challenge. Some other states I go to, managed care organizations get behind, or the government gets behind, you know, whether it's the local, the county, or the state itself, gets behind in payments, and a lot of agencies have cash flow issues. I'm anticipating that we're probably going to be okay with that, but smaller organizations that you interact with are going to have some real challenges, I would guess, with that. There's going to be some approval questions, because some of the people that are approved for services now are approved by location, where five people might live together. They might all have the same rate with the expectation that they're going to have the same kinds of services. In the new model, it's all going to be individualized, so people might have to move because the service setting might be 24 hours a day and they might not need 24 hours a day, or they might need more services than the people that they're living with. So that might be a challenge as well. Transportation has always been a challenge. It's been a challenge here. You know, we've been working hard to try to resolve issues and working together for that. I see that as being a challenge, you know, in the future as well, because we're a rural state. So there'll be issues with transportation. But those are things we've faced in the past that we're just going to have to work our way through.
Maybe I should get your phone number and pass that information on to certain people that I run into that, you know, have a lot of concerns. And like you say, a lot of it is not understanding the whole process, not having it presented in such a way that, you know, they can see its immediate impact. Everyone is always looking at what's going to happen to the clients, and they always tie these dollar figures about this is going to save X number of dollars. And then you all of a sudden look at the one or two poor examples and use that as a measuring stick that says it could happen. I find this topic something that, and I know Deb is sitting here as well, and through our mental health region and so forth, and I'm sure it's going to be a topic that our regional governance board is going to want to pay close attention to, because we as supervisors really don't have the expertise to understand and to evaluate. But it's our, you know, our former CPCs and core line people and so forth that work in this area that do have a better handle. But if we could have occasionally someone like yourself or others come in if they're, and just share some of your perspective on some of the things that you've seen in other areas, I think it makes a big difference in terms of how people begin to move beyond where they are today with a thought that a change in the system doesn't necessarily mean that the service is going to be reduced and clients are going to be impacted in a negative way. So I just throw that out as something to keep on the, in mind. And I may want to call on you again.
Sure.
To talk to some groups or individuals that I hear from about some of these concerns.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Can you give me just a few words of encouragement for the father of a 20-year-old daughter who's on the ID waiver? And it's just, we're just starting the process of trying to find the right services, because everything we hear says, oh, you couldn't have come in at a worse time.
Well, I would say that every 5 years there's the worst time scenario, comes up. When the counties took over case management from the state, was described as the worst time. It was going to be the worst time. I think it ended up being a very good thing. As we went from having RCFs, residential care facilities, to having waiver services in general, people were concerned that was the worst of times. I went to Woodward State Hospital School, Reed Hammonds and I, and we went and saw 48 different people that were living at Woodward State Hospital Schools when the waiver program came up. And we talked with those parents of those people living at Woodward. And they were all concerned about, the community, that this was going to be terrible, that this was going to be a huge change, and who's going to support my kid. And we took 20 people out of Woodward State Hospital School and put them in waiver homes. All those people stayed out of the state institution, and we were able to provide those services. And it was very scary. It is scary, and it's challenging, and I would agree with all that. It's going to be frightening. I would be most concerned for those people that are marginal, that they don't need daily services, but they might need hourly services, because I think those people are going to be cut back in some of their services. And I think for some of the parents, it's going to be very scary, because some of our people can be more independent, but now we have to press ourselves to figure out how that can happen, to train them to be able to call 911 themselves, to make sure that they're able to address safety issues at night, because for some people we do provide that to make people feel more comfortable when maybe we're at the point now where we have to say, okay, that's not an option. But we have to go to the next step and be a little bit more independent. When I started 35 years ago with Mainstream, I didn't see people being more independent. I started with group homes, and I thought the best we could do was just better group homes. But since then, I've seen people move out. I've seen people get jobs, have relationships, get married, have kids. People that 35 years ago I would have said that was impossible with, but we have to kind of change our mindset with it. So I don't know how reassuring that is for a parent. I've got a sister with a disability. It's frightening for me what might happen with her. But I do know that there's good providers out there, and there's good people like you that are out there, and together we can make this happen. We can make it work. They've already done it. You've done it with Mainstream for 40 years. And I know that you've done it with other organizations much longer, George's program in particular, you left. But.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's very helpful. It's quite an enlightening conversation. I'm glad you were here. This is a very timely topic, because we're going to be hearing more as we, move forward in this area. So thank you so much.
And I'm going to leave my cards up here, guys. I think you've already got my contact information, but I'm going to leave the three cards up here on the table. So.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Have a great day. You too. Next item is consideration of minutes, and we've got both the minutes from our last Tuesday's meeting, as well as the canvas that we did for Collins Maxwell.
I would move the minutes of 4:14:15 and the canvas minutes of 4:14:15 as well.
Second. Motion and a second. Corrections or additions? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims for 4:23.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda board, please add road closures 1534 and 1535 and add utility permits 1560 and 1561.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Additional items. Consideration of sending FY15 budget amendment to publication for 5/12/15 public hearing. Lisa Markley. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Thank you. How are you?
Okay. However, I do want to start this with a disclaimer that I'm going to increase this amendment slightly, and I'll tell you why in a minute, okay?
Okay.
I want to amend the budget. The last time we can amend this fiscal year 15 budget is May 30th. We're going to amend it May 12th, if that's okay with you. You've got the documentation that I submitted with it. Overall, we're going to be raising our expenditures by 14% from the original budget back in March of 2014.
And take me through, so as I look at the numbers, I see $3 million in mental health, a $3 million increase in mental health.
The 46% increase.
But is that primarily transferring that money to the region?
Correct.
So it's not that we're spending dollars, it's that we're transferring those dollars to the region.
Because as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, as you know from putting the FY16 budget together, we don't know what we're going to send to the region until we get closer to the end of the fiscal year. So,
and that's 90% of the total increase that we're talking about here.
Yes.
Okay.
And as you can see, the decrease in revenues is also substantial in the intergovernmental, which, again, has to do with we budgeted to receive 1.2 in property tax relief.
Equalization for the mental health, right.
That went directly to the region, so we never brought it into our budget. Okay. So I'm lowering what we're actually going to bring in revenues.
So between those, so $1.4 million that you're lowering what's coming in revenues, and $1.2 million of that is in that equalization payment that went straight to the region. So there's 1.2.
1.172 was the mental health property tax relief.
Okay. And $3,059,000 in mental health dollars that you want to amend in as an expenditure, is all of that going to as a transfer to the region, or is there some of that that are truly expenses?
3.5 is what I'm showing the regional payment as.
Oh, so you're not even amending in the whole regional payment.
So we had some dollars in there just in case.
So when you take out that $4.5 million, roughly, we actually have a really good budget. We're just cleaning up the books for the mental health adjustments. I mean, is that if that's not accurate?
That's accurate, yes.
Okay. Because this looks terrible. Yes. I just want to make sure I understand why it looks terrible.
It sure does. Again, by not budgeting for the regional payment, we'll see it again next year.
Depending on what the regional payment is.
Right. Yeah.
But we won't see the impact to revenues for next year because we didn't budget for that.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The other part of the intergovernmental is quite frankly, the revenues from CLP have been down. So I'm amending out about $1 million in revenues there.
Are we making progress on figuring out the IME payment? Do you know that?
I brought that email with me. Chris just emailed me this morning, or us this morning, and said that he has found a remittance advice that was 215 pages long, and he needs to do some work to trace through the dates of service and what they're doing with that.
But we were told in roughly December that there was a $600,000 payment coming from IME, and we've never seen it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, is that still the 2012? Or
that's the FY12. Yes, that's the 2012 cost report. Cost report.
Settlement. I guess the best case scenario right now is there seems to be misunderstanding, but the earlier reported dollar figure is very problematic based on what Chris shared with me yesterday.
Okay.
And that's why he wants to spend more time going back through and looking at those figures and seeing what...
Do we have that $600,000 calculated into all this? Are we still expecting it? And can we get by if it doesn't show up?
That's going into the mental health fund also.
Right.
So, yes, at this point in time, if we don't get it, the mental health fund has a lower ending fund balance.
Right. Okay, good. That's good. Thank you.
You have the documentation by department. As you know, I have to publish by service area, so you have the documentation by department, which is easier for you guys to wrap your heads around, I'm sure. The some of the departments are departments that I have reviewed and determined whether they need an amendment or not, whether it be a revenue or an expense. And some of them are requested from individual departments, and you have that documentation also. Overall, as it stands, we're going to be looking at general supplemental with an ending fund balance of approximately 18.5%. Mental health of after the million dollar reserved portion for transition, 0.72%. Rural services almost 17%, and secondary roads about 24%. The one thing I would like to talk to you about is adjusting for the $235,000 that you approved back in September for TIF urban renewal projects. Did not put that into this amendment, should have. So we need to transfer it from the TIF fund to the urban renewal fund. So there'll be transfers of $235,000 income.
On both sides.
On both sides. And then put some dollars in to actually spend yet this fiscal year, because we have some of the cities that are actually requesting some of those dollars. We did budget the entire amount for next year, but I think some of them are going to need the dollars earlier than next year. So I'd like to increase that so that we have.
And you're talking about putting in the entire amount, or are you talking about putting in part of it?
No, it looks to me like I'm talking about putting in a little over $100,000 into the expenses.
Okay.
So the transfer will be an additional $235,000, the expenses.
Out of the TIF fund into that. Okay.
Yes, and where did I – I just lost my train of thought. So that would be my request before I send this to publication to go ahead and do that. One thing I want you to note is that you do not have to appropriate all the dollars we amend into a budget. So whatever we send to publication, whatever we approve in a budget amendment, we still don't have to appropriate all those dollars. You also can only lower at the public hearing, just as you can the budget itself. You can only lower the expenses. You cannot raise them after the public hearing, or at the public hearing after publication. And if I send it to publication this week, it will be in the 4:30 paper, which will meet the guidelines for the 5:12 public hearing. Any questions for me?
Yeah, maybe a couple. So the first one's more of a statement. I want to make sure I'm seeing this accurately. So if we pull out and set aside the impact that mental health is having on our budget this year, it looks to me like we're looking at amending this budget to receive just over $600,000 more in revenue than we budgeted, and we're looking to spend just over $350,000 in expenses. Amending more revenues in than expenses, not including mental health. Clearly, mental health throws out of whack. Second part is, Lisa, I'm in complete agreement with you that we go ahead and we publish at the highest possible rate, but I think I need to give everybody fair notice that some of these requests, it's a fairly steep climb to get me excited about some of these additional requests that we've got. I'm fully on board with everybody who says, hey, communications, we all recognize that our phone system has cost us more than we budgeted for. We've got to amend dollars in there. I'm completely aware there's some, you know, we put new towers on this building that we weren't expecting. We need to amend some dollars in for there. But then we've got some other things like overtime line items and things like that that were truly and fairly budgeted early on, that it's just going to be, it's going to be a steep climb to get me to the point that I feel like we should be amending dollars in for those. So I would fully expect that whatever we publish, at least I'm going to advocate for a lower approved amount than that. And I want to make sure all of our departments and offices are aware that just by this getting published does not by any stretch mean that those dollars are going to get amended into a budget.
The question, when you reference overtime dollars, are we talking about overtime that has already been earned and gained, or are we talking about the possibility of putting dollars in for what we anticipate will be overtime
I think both. I think both. I think some of our offices and departments have at some point used overtime as an item where when we ask for budget cuts, they can just go right there and cut it immediately without worrying about what it's really going to be. And I don't think that's a sound budgeting practice. I think if we in good faith talk through overtime, in one case, I know we actually discouraged one office from lowering their overtime last year. They lowered it anyway, and now they're still back here requesting an increase in overtime. We're just going to have a hard, conversation about that. All I'm trying to do, Wayne, I'm not trying to have us debate the issues today.
Right,
that'll happen in May 12th. Is that what you said?
Right.
On May 12th, I just want to give all of our departments and offices fair notice that there is going to be some debate from my perspective on some of these.
Okay.
With that, if there's no other questions for Lisa, I would sure entertain a motion to publish as proposed, including the additional TIF transfer that Lisa mentioned.
Move approval as stated.
Second.
Any further discussion? Lisa, anything to add?
No, thanks.
All right. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes with the noted change. Next item, and I'm excited about this one, discussion and consideration of recorder quarterly report. Stacy Herridge. Stacy, thanks for coming to see us.
Oh, I don't know if I'd say I'm excited.
I'm excited.
No, okay.
We don't normally our elected officials just throw this on our consent agenda and we get to read it, but we don't really get to talk about it. I like getting a chance to talk
about
it.
I want to thank the board for letting me talk a little bit today. This is actually my first quarterly report to submit as an elected official, so I thought it might be appropriate to go through some of the changes that the office has had in the past 3 months. So I first want to thank my staff, commend my staff. The past couple of months has been hard, but their commitment to our office is very, very evident. And I also want to extend a thank you to Cal and Facilities and IT for my continued askings for changes and what do you think about this? So I appreciate their help. Some of the changes and achievements that we've had the past couple of months. We just recently joined the county's cash management banking system with State Bank, so I just got my token, and Treasurer Tweet was able to help me with that. We've been continued to work with the county's interagency group, real estate group, to rethink how the annexation process is handled, and have been working with planning and development on ways to increase efficiency and communication between the offices with regards to subdivisions. Along that same lines, Margaret James offered Matt Corey's services to help our office establish. We're testing a way to review surveys using the shared drive, S drive, instead of having to cut and paste an email. So that's been very helpful as well. One thing I'm very happy about is we started offering passport photos in February. The initial cost was $709.47. To date, the county has taken over 80 photos, which equals $800. So I'm very happy about that. And I want to also thank Judy Batchy from CLP. She offered an unused screen projector and a tripod, which we were able to get for free. So that was very fortunate. To date, we've done, the quarterly report shows 300 passports and 47 photos, and in April we've done 47 passport apps and 33 photos to date, so we've been keeping kind of busy. On the same lines, Katie Harrington just this week received her certification to be a passport agent. So now we have two agents to serve the public, which is great. And the separation of duties is very important in our office between passports and vital records. So our new employee, Nicole Wilson, is now taking over the vital records. She's doing great. She's been there a month and came to us from Mary Greeley, so we're very fortunate to have her. Just this past couple weeks, Rich Smith from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources came to give us a refresher on our electronic licensing system, and we just started offering hunting and fishing licenses. The county receives about 50 cents a license, which isn't a lot, but the amount of convenience to the public is great. We sent out a press release just a couple days ago with that once we got all of our information. Katie Harrington also joined our EAC group, our countywide group, and I believe it's the first time the recorder's office has had a representative for over 10 years, so that's great. And we continue to make changes in our office policy regarding emailing documents to the public, which they are just over the moon about. The past couple of months, I think it's really important to collaborate with the other offices, and I feel that I've continued to do that. I've had the opportunity to go speak with Wayne Trickerath at Iowa State. I continue to be an active participant as we convert with the TCM Enterprise conversion process. I've worked with Renee Tweet to establish it's an auctioneering bill of sale that we put on our websites too, that we both can use, which was good. One thing that before I was elected, I had talked to Darren Moon a little bit about getting some documents emailed to him after they were recorded. So we started doing that, the section corner certificates and the surveys. So he's very appreciative of that. And we're also emailing the DD-214s over to Brett and Luke instead of faxing or mailing them. So they're happy about that. We get them to him real quick because they usually have the veteran there in their office. What else? One thing that we're excited about next week, with Lucy Martin's idea and Renee Tweet, we're going to have a joint, is it like a meet and greet, Lucy? Meet and greet session next Wednesday with all of the city clerks to kind of go over what our office's roles are and how we can help them if they have questions like recording documents, the budget process, that type of thing, and apportionment. Other than that, continue to work with Leanne Harder, the outreach specialist, that I pretty much say, hey, Leanne, what do you think about this press release? She puts it on Twitter, social media. I think that's important to always have a good updated website. So with that, do you have any questions at all?
No, I was just wondering, if you needed a food taster at that meet and greet.
Are we having food, Lucy? We're going to meet this Friday to talk about it, so.
Well, I just want to thank you. It's exciting to see the things that you have instituted and your continual outreach with other departments and so forth. Just really appreciate that and want to continue to encourage that collaboration. It just makes us all better, and it gives opportunity for our citizens to have a greater awareness of the various services that they have and can be streamlined in a more effective way. So thank you.
Right, and I hope you don't mind that I did this during my quarterly report. I'd like to do this like the next couple quarterly reports, if you don't mind, and
feedback.
I like it. I appreciate it. I think it's what's supposed to happen here. And I understand that all of our elected officials have really busy professional lives, and that many times it is easier just to throw it on a consent agenda. I think there's real value in doing this. And Stacey, I just want to say the people of Story County are really, really fortunate to have somebody as forward-thinking as you, as customer service driven, and with as positive a collaborative outlook as you have. I'm really, really glad you're the recorder. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Next is consideration of site development plan of application for zoning permit.
Sorry, do you need to consider her report?
We need to approve her report since we didn't get to do it on our consent agenda as we know.
So move.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Report is approved.
And accepted.
Mm-hmm. Now, consideration of site development plan.
Morning. As stated, this is a request to approve the site plan as proposed in the staff report by Casey's for the new and improved modernized Casey's at the Gilbert Corner there on 69 and 170th. I will admit I'm just a placeholder here. This is Charlie's review and his staff report, and he's off on a professional conference this week, so he asked me to be here in his stead. So if you have any specific questions or concerns, we may need to postponed to next week, that he might be able to answer them better than I. But
our biggest hurdle, as I recall, Ryan, was the overhang of the canopy covering the dispensers. I think we've got that handled.
Yep. And according to our review, this meets all the standards set forth in Chapter 8 of our general site planning standards, and we recommend approval, subject to them working with the county engineer as well as county sanitarian on specific comments that they made in their interagency comments. I can go through those specifically if you'd like.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind going through them, just so we...
Margaret mentioned a capped well, around the. Where's my page here? Near where they're putting the gas tanks and how to remediate that, as well as an old septic tank and possibly grease trap tank where the old restaurant is that they'll be taking out. And then Darren mentioned that they would need to get right-of-way permits for work in the right-of-way, and then also sent a comment regarding specific shoulder work and specs for that. And it's our understanding that the applicant has already modified their site plan and is already working with those two to remediate those concerns.
Very good. Question for Ron?
Nope.
No, I did get an email from Charlie letting me know that he wouldn't be here today, but he said everything, all the questions that they had had or that we had brought up had been, he was satisfied that, that our concerns had been met. So.
Great.
I would move approval of the site development plan for the zoning permit for the convenience store at the Gilbert Corner.
With the noted conditions?
With noted conditions. And second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes with the noted conditions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of the proposed new indefeasible right of use agreement and approval of quote from Communication Innovators for the dark fiber connection.
Ooh.
To provide first leg of backup route to the Justice Center and include a redundant connection for Story County Medical Center effective for 20 years at a cost of $25,000, Barb Steinbeck, and somebody who used to be Matt Reese. I don't know if they're
vaguely familiar.
Good morning. Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology. Looks like we're going to have to share the microphone.
We're working on that, though, aren't we, Barb?
The other one needs soldering, and we don't have the tools to do that.
No, but we're getting a whole new setup, aren't we?
It'll be an enhancement.
Okay.
Guardedly optimistic.
So Matt approached me a couple months ago with a proposal, and I'll let him talk a little bit about that as well. I was interested in it because it did have some future implications for Story County, but also I do believe in working with the community. And the first, it's a two-phase project. The first phase, of course, would be very beneficial to Story Medical. The second phase would be more beneficial for Story County to provide a redundant loop to the Justice Center. Right now, we just have one fiber path to the Justice Center. And as Matt had pointed out to me, it has been broken a few times. So now we need to make this a little bigger. So to help... I must admit, we've spent hours and hours on this contract to get it to a place where we think we're happy with it. And, of course, this isn't going to. It's still not big enough, is it? We need to make this bigger. Nope, that didn't help any. Well, I think this is good enough for UDC right now. We took an old contract and revised the wording for the new contract and made several changes, but as you can see, here is, this would provide more redundancy, actually, for Story Medical. So what we've proposed, here's the current route of the Story County fiber. It's the yellow. And as you can see, it comes out of the building here. Well, that's a little better. There. I think that's where I want it to be, so I won't click any more mice. It comes down H Avenue and goes straight over past the school here, and then it meets at a T here. Actually, it does go north as well. But the part that we're talking about is in red. Our fiber ends here at a handhole, and Story Medical is over here. The orange was another alternative path we had discussed, but what's in red is what we're going to talk about today, and what this will provide is Story Medical will hook on with the red, and that's the proprietary information, the communication innovators quote that I submitted also, and they will shoot, it might be overkill, but 24 strands is the same price as 48 strands. So we're going to 48 strands of fiber, single mode fiber, through this path that Story Medical can hook on to at this point and will allow them to ride our fiber up through our building and to the Justice Center. I have another picture of the Justice Center. And this is an old map, of course, but for some reason we have no new maps since Matt left. but the path then, this is a larger view. Here is Story County, and then the green shows the zigzag to the Justice Center. What we've had issues with in the past is this is the railroad track here. We've had a cut north of the track and south of the track, and that effectively cuts us off from the Justice Center. So phase two, then, we would work to provide a redundant route to the Justice Center, not following this path, so that we wouldn't be caught with no connectivity.
Would that be what was in orange on the previous picture or something like that?
Yes. Well, and originally that was an alternative route to Story Medical. Matt thought this would be a lot simpler, and I do too. This would be a lot of digging, and there's not always handholds there. So we just included that.
Right, but ultimately, and I'm with you on what you're proposing today, but ultimately we'd like to have redundancy for getting this building to the Justice Center, and it doesn't
right.
look to me like this accomplishes that. It accomplishes redundancy for the Justice Center to be able to get out, but we don't have two tie points between this building and the Justice Center.
Correct. Matt, do you want to provide some discussion on
so is that
perhaps a
separate discussion that may
I think it's a future
come
discussion.
Future discussion?
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, as is there a way to then tie into the proposed route here that we're looking at, or would there have to be another alternate route just for that? Because, in other words, when we talk medical center, we're actually talking about the new facility now that's in the southern part of Nevada rather than, you know, the one up the street here.
Correct. Okay. So looking at the colors here, the red and the orange is kind of they're a complete project for Story County government to get a redundant route to the Justice Center. Phase one, half of the route benefits Story County Medical. And with that, I approached Barb, and the quote was right around that 20-some thousand, and we would be willing to go for 20 years for $25,000. So we would fund the first proposed, and then Barb would have to look at the second phase of the connection from our north campus into the administration building here, which would give her the final loop mm-hmm. to provide that redundancy there. As Barb says, it's been a pleasure working with her and, you know, working with the two entities to work for kind of a goal on both sides, but also a common goal. And, you know, I've been more than willing to help Barb. I've known the fiber for many years and stuff, and actually we've constructed a lot of it since the Justice Center build back in 2000. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If we don't have the first phase, there's no... You can have the first phase before you have the second phase.
Correct. Yeah. And at one time we were talking about going with the first phase of the orange, but that actually has us routing through the administration building here, which it makes more sense to have our south campus just route directly. I mean, both phases are in need to have the redundancy. But that way we don't have to worry about, you know, Barb doesn't have to worry about any inside work going on that would disrupt us.
Okay. And there was some talk during this whole tower project about the microwave that's on that antenna that's on that tower. And once both phases are complete, that would eliminate the need for that microwave. I know there was some discussion about this would be the time to replace it while we're up there. It did have a pretty healthy price sticker to replace that. But am I mistaken that if we complete both phases and have that complete loop, then in the event that that microwave tower is no longer serviceable, that we could eliminate it? Maybe.
That is correct. Okay. And the microwave was a backup for the connection between us and the Justice Center, and I believe it was internet only. It wasn't the data. So, yeah, we don't have anything. IT itself won't have anything on the new tower.
Okay.
I brought up a picture here to give you a better idea. Now, this is from the Justice Center, this over here, but this is how the fiber goes down and connects to then where it's received by Story Medical.
Mm-hmm.
They're just over here in the bottom corner. They're not showing on the map. But this is the common handhold. If you look above where it says Google Earth, that's the common handhold that we go to.
I think it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense for us to work toward redundant fiber wherever possible. As we talk about the possible expansion of the Justice Center, getting rid of the smoker's courtyard and having all of our county attorney's house there, we're going to see an increased demand and need for that to be reliant over there and need to have substantial connections between all our buildings. I think this makes sense as a good first step, and we're fortunate that we can partner on a project that's mutually beneficial to hopefully save us some dollars on doing something like this on our own.
Yeah, and we had looked in the past, even when I was at the county here, we were looking about going west of town up S-14, and you know, you're looking at crossing two railroads, you're looking about $80,000 to $90,000, and it's the other thing too is back in 2009, 2010, when the hospital was looking at getting fiber over to Ames by VetMed, they actually, the DOT and the hospital and the county actually joined together to go down Highway 30. So, I mean, this isn't one of the first, but probably one of the many cooperations that we all have the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason for the 48 strands. I'm sure we won't ever need them, but they're there, you know, if someone else has an idea they want to lease something.
And then my only final question, Barb, is civil counsel's had a chance to review all this?
Yes. Jessica has reviewed it. Matt brought some changes to me late Friday, and she approved those. We do have to... as he pointed out this morning, we need to change the wording a little bit on the hospital itself. I think it's this one. The wording is a little on A, you see here. We need to change the wording on the Story County Medical. This right here. Is this what you wanted? Okay. Yep. So I think we're good. Now, I budgeted next year for this project. Things on Matt's end have escalated their need for this connection, so that's why we're coming to you today. The payment will cover the cost of the trenching. Obviously, we'll have to pay for the trenching first or the work from Communication Innovators. I do have money in my budget right now, but toward the end of the fiscal year, I may not. So.
Yeah, but our problem with that is we just sent our final publication.
Right.
Right.
So if it's not in there, we got trouble making the payment before July 1st.
I assume you can.
The construction costs for the first, what's in red here, will be the IRU agreement, the revenue would be, would offset the construction.
Okay.
So we would get them both in this fiscal year. One just may be out of balance for a couple days.
Yeah, and I'm, as long as it can be absorbed in what we have, I'm fine. But yeah, we can't make promises to pay something that we don't have dollars to pay for.
And the contract stipulates that they will pay from being invoiced. So we'll make sure that we invoice as soon as we can, as soon as the work is completed. Now, another benefit to us to enter into this project with Story Medical, they did have another option that they could go with the ICN for funding and help with this project. However, if the ICN backed this fiber, Story County would not be able to participate, which was another reason why I felt it was a good idea to come forward with this. And Matt has indicated that his board meets on the 27th, and we're anticipating they will approve the document. They've obviously seen it. So I would withhold signature until I know you like to sign after the other party signs. So once he has those signatures, I will bring it back for Story County signature.
Good. Any other questions?
No.
All right. We need, this is a consideration.
I'll move approval of the proposed and the feasible right of use agreement and the dark fiber project. First leg at the back of front, Justice Center.
Second.
Have a motion, a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thank you. Matt, good to see you, man.
Hey, don't be a stranger. Lunch today if she's home with a sick kid.
That's why I came.
Exactly. And that's exactly what she'll tell me.
Thank you.
We're to departmental reports. Wake up, Joe. We're to you, man.
Everybody's favorite.
It's going to get good, Gavin. You can't leave now.
Gavin, this is the entertainment portion of our, of our show today. And you're leaving?
He's got a job to go to.
Don't take it personal, Jeff.
I won't. We need to wait for Wayne.
No, we're good.
Okay. I'll talk loud. He can hear me in the bathroom. Yeah, my umbrella broke on Sunday during a soccer game. It went whoop. So I know, you know, people. I'm used to people walking out and making fun of me, but it was a pretty good rain we had. I'm glad we got a little moisture because burn season is over for the most part for us. And as you can see, I got that nice glow from here up, radiant heat. And, you know, everyone's been out. We've been pretty busy in the conservation. Speaking for Mike's staff also, getting Dakin's Lake up and running and whatnot. But so I wrote a few things down. If you're interested about the drainage ditch project, well, Finco wrapped up their responsibility, and I finally made it in here to sign their claim, and we're going to get that processed. You know, the landowners south, I think that's 140th, south of Story City, they didn't want a lot of those trees removed. So it looks, you know, a little strange, but that's how we worked it, and that's how it'll go. And so there are we're still working up there. I mean, Tyler's been up there a lot. There is some brush we still need to work on. We've done a lot with what was left. We learned a little bit about what to do and what not to do with leaving brush piles and moving them around. You know, it's a learning curve. There are no piles in any of the tilled land, so it won't, you know, mess with any of the producers or landowners. And I've talked to all those folks up there, and everyone's good to go. Our initial plan before this last rain, we were working on getting them stacked again and burning them off in some of the CRP buffer strips, which needed mid-contract management anyway. So we were helping the landowner burn their CRP and the brush piles up. But with this rain, I think we're going to be waiting until fall again. And they're okay with that. It's pretty good pheasant habitat. but we don't want to leave brush piles on the NRCS, the filter strips, too long because it's they give a little variance for that, but, you know, not forever. So we're pretty much going to pull the pin on it up there. Beside one pile next to Highway 69, there's one we're going to burn we can get to. Otherwise, we're going to move on to Warren 11. You know where Warren 11 is? S-14.
Okay.
North. You go a mile, then the open ditch slides a little bit, cattywampus, as I would say, to the northeast for a quarter mile. That was some heavy trees, and we logged all that out last fall and this winter. And the rain on Monday, we were going to get the county's big loader and stack that brush and let it. It's stacked a little bit, you know, 50%, but we learned that our little tractor doesn't push the brush very well. We get their loader, it does it in 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And so that'll dry. We got to get that done, and then we're going to have to rent a landscape rake, medium light duty. We may buy one or budget for one sometime if this keeps going on, but we need to rake some of the small branches out of the tilled area so the landowner can farm that, and he's aware of that also. With that, then we're going to move down to Grant 5, which we started 2 years ago, and keep working on that. So that's our next move. We're not going to levy for any new funding or any more money for any new projects because we just have enough laying around that we need to get on. So Tyler's been doing a lot of that. We hit the buffer strip. Well, what do I call it? Yeah, my initiative, the buffer strip initiative, pretty hard. As you know, water quality is a big topic in open ditches and things around the state. And so we're hooked up with the NRCS. We started that dialogue and a lot of communication, been in their office a lot. We're on speed dial together. There are a lot of acres going in Story County in CRP this year.
Good.
Incredible amounts, more than the last 8 years. So that'll help a little bit with revenue on drill money. You know, that's not a big ticket item. It also means that I got to keep that equipment up, too. And I'm talking about 400 to 500 acres, which is significant. There's some pretty big 40-acre wetland WRPs coming down the Skunk River and Squaw Creek and Indian Creek and things like that. So, and a few filter strips along our open ditches. So, you know, public would need to be aware of some of these landowners and producers that the rate for this is up remarkably high, $350 an acre or so. So it's competitive, and a lot of landowners are taking advantage of this, especially, again, along open ditches and the floodplain. So, I'm on everybody's sticky note. I missed 11 calls already today, so it's good. You know, you got to be careful what you wish for, but we wanted to get some of the land protected. We hit it hard, and it paid off. So I do work with the nonprofits on this. The Pheasants Forever, Story County chapter, a lot of these folks will order the seed through Pheasants Forever, and that seed is delivered to our shop. They get the bill, and then when they pick the drill up, the seed and the drill together, you know, we got it figured out. It's a pretty good process. So we've done a little bit of work in roadside. You saw us, I took some pictures, didn't have time to put a little Who Dickie show on for you, but, you know, there are some roadsides out there that we burned to keep the brush down and help rejuvenate the natives and the flowers, which you'll all thank me for come July, and give me a pat on the back and everybody for the nice color out there and the deep-rooted plants that do so well. I did put a press release out to let the public know we were doing that and to make them aware that burning roadsides is a huge liability for them if they do it on their own. We don't recommend it. I can't always get to it if they call me, but, you know, when you burn your own roadside, anything can happen. There's been some things going down. And the thing that does upset me are the utilities that take a hit that cost a lot of money for all of us to pay for melted insulators and things like that. You know, you typically don't burn a telephone pole in half, but over time it wears on it. So we try to water around those where we burn. A little bit of seeding going on, not much. Tyler and the new guy, seasonal guy I hired on Monday, They're out throwing some seed down in the wind on 250th, which is the road you're going to build a new bridge on, west of Hickory Grove. They did a little work down there. We need to get that to green up. And we ordered silt logs and erosion fabric, not just for that project, but for others around the county, so we can keep our soil where it needs to be when we're doing construction. Yeah. Private lands, well, I already mentioned about all the CRP going in. A little bit of work up at Dakin's lately. IRVM has not done a lot. We help them when everyone, you know, is called in on pole position and go up there and we work together. We do have some of the prairie to do yet up there, but we like to get the soil temperature just a little warmer for that stuff. So about now, after it dries out, I'll be working with their staff to get that done. And there's some neat things going on with seed in the state called a pollinator mix, promoting the butterflies and things. And so we're going to get some extra seed for that with minimal cost. Equipment maintenance. Reno, just to let you know, Paul, Reno, the 4900 International Tandem Truck, 1996, with 385,000 miles. We took it into a guy, and he fixed it in Ames, worked on it for 2 months, and it will now pass the federal standard inspection on the highway. Got some brakes on it, fixed some broken parts, put a couple wheels back on it. It's good to go. $3,400, and that thing's good. So it is. It wasn't that bad of shape. $3,400 to get that thing up and running for a few more years. It's sound. The engine's good. We even, Wayne, put a new seat in it so my back doesn't get sore. Remember the safety?
Yep.
Okay, so we got a deluxe, well, not really. It's just a new.
Just new seat.
Upgraded. Yep. So anyway, that's today, this morning, we loaded it on a lowboy. The hydro seater part, took it over to Fernald. We're going to drive the truck over when I get out of here, and we're going to put it all together, and we'll have the hydro seater up and running, which will make Darren happy and also Mike Cox, because we have some hydro seeding to do. The drills, they're getting used a lot on our properties, and the private folks around the county really know they're there. It's a great program to rent that stuff out and help protect our soil. It's almost weed season. I did get a call yesterday about, some weeds, and being the weed commissioner, when you send someone a weed notice, you know, in July, like last July, it's good to follow up with those people. So now's the time to do that so they don't have the same reoccurring problem. We did have mice hit one of our, the burn rig, our wildland burn slip-in unit, you know, like the volunteer fire department has it. They really trashed that thing, and I worked on it for a while and finally gave up. I got it kind of running, but I had to take it into Van Wall. So the mice set us back a little bit, but I took care of those things. Let's see. Safety meeting for our seasonal staff is May 18th. And as a safety chair, I'll help put that on, of course. We'll probably get some of the road department new employees. I think there's a couple of those there. And get them trained and orientated so we're all good to go. And little trouble hiring summer or seasonal staff this year. I don't say summer because they go in the spring and the fall. I opened it back up. We only had one out of the two. A lot of folks take other jobs somewhere else. We may have to look at salaries and things like that. Mike's in charge of that. And I do have three or four applicants I need to look at online today and see if we can't get another 98.6 warm body to help IRVM. Wayne, I ordered some safety things for my shop, including exit signs.
Ooh.
And an eyewash station, so I'm ready for the audit when we ever get around to it. I think that's it.
Joe, entertaining as always, man. Thanks.
You
guys are doing a good job. If you've got time before you run up to Fernald, I'd like to visit with you just a second after we conclude this meeting.
Okay.
So if you can stick for just a minute.
Okay.
Other reports, nothing. Liaison assignments. Paul Toot.
Pass.
Wayne Clinton.
Just very quickly, I went over to see Michelle, and then yesterday, and I realized that she had a meeting down at Des Moines with Optime, so I did have a chance to visit with Chris Sorensen, and he just kind of gave me a quick update on the cost settlement challenge that he's reviewing again that was mentioned earlier. And he said he's coming very close to wrapping up the final phase of the transition and feels very good about where we are right now. So that was encouraging news. So other than that, that's it.
Outstanding. All right. Public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Seeing no one moving toward the microphone, announcements. Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
Pass. I think there's some trees something up at Jenkins Lake tomorrow, isn't it, though?
1 to 5.
Yeah, Earth Day. I think I may try to slip up there and check that. Yeah.
Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.